Welcome to Stories from the Shadows. Haunted tales from the golden age of ghost stories and supernatural horror fiction. I'm Mardell, reading Sweeney Todd. Chapter 10. About this time, while the incidents of our tale are taking place, the pious frequenters of Old St. Dunstan's Church noticed a most abominable odor throughout the sacred edifice. A ponderous stone was raised in the flooring. The beadle, the church warden, and the workmen shrank back. Back. They could go no further. "Ain't it a horrid smell?" said the beadle. A gentleman plainly dressed advanced. He was no other than Sir Richard Blunt, the magistrate, who had been consulted by Colonel Jeffrey as to the disappearance of Thornhill. He had taken great interest in the case, and was endeavouring to unravel the mystery. "Gentlemen," said he, "if what I expect be found here, we cannot have too few witnesses." The workmen were dismissed. Sir Richard took a paper from his pocket and unfolded it. "From this plan," he said, "the stone which I have raised discloses a staircase communicating with two passages. I have instructions from the Home Secretary to use my own discretion in this affair. I will, therefore, with one of my officers, descend to the vaults." Sir Richard and Crotchet, the officer, both commenced the descent. On their return, Sir Richard looked ghastly pale. He had evidently seen something which had shaken his strong nerves. After the stone was replaced, the magistrate gave a signal to Crotchet to follow him. "Now, Crotchet, no one for the future is to be shaved in Sweeney Todd's alone."
"Had we not better grab him at once?" said the officer.
"No, he has an accomplice, or accomplices." The stone was replaced, and Sir Richard gave a signal to Crotchet, and they both left the church together. "Now, Crotchet," said the magistrate, "I will give you further particulars confided to me. It appears Sweeney Todd's shop boy has also disappeared, and he placed a notice in his window requiring another. Now, Miss Oakley, being convinced that Thornhill is no other than Mark Ingestry, a former sweetheart of hers under an assumed name, and that he has been kidnapped or murdered by Sweeney Todd, has disguised herself as a boy and been engaged by the barber. It is a dangerous game, but she is a brave girl, and I am in communication with her. Sweeney Todd is evidently connected with Mrs. Lovett, and the vaults lead to her pie shop. I must endeavor to find out the bakehouse and the cook. I will at once set about it." After parting with Sir Richard Blunt at Temple Bar, Crotchet walked up Fleet Street, upon Sweeney Todd's side of the way, until he overtook a man with a pair of spectacles on and a stoop in his gait as though age had crept upon him. "King," said Crotchet. "All right," said the spectacled old gentleman in a firm voice. "What's the news?"
"Long job, I think. Where's Morgan?"
"On the other side of the way. Well, just listen to me as we walk along, and if you see him, beckon him over to us." As they walked along, Crotchet told King what were the orders of Sir Richard Blunt, and they were soon joined by another officer. Todd was standing at his door. He glared up and down the street like someone intent upon the destruction of a fresh victim.
"Stop him! Stop him!"
cried a voice from the other side of the street.
"Stop Pison, he's giving me the slip, and I'm blessed if he won't pitch into that ere barber. Stop him! Pison! Pison, come here, boy! Come here! Oh, Lord! He's nabbed him! I knew he would, sure as a horse's hind leg ain't gammon of bacon. My eyes, won't there be a row? He's nabbed the barber like ninepence."
Before the ostler at the Bullfinch, for it was from his lips this speech came, could get one half of it uttered, the dog, who was known to the readers by the name of Hector, as well as his new name of Pison,
dashed over the road, apparently infuriated at the sight of Todd, and rushing upon him, seized him with his teeth. Todd gave a howl of rage and pain and fell to the ground. The whole street was in an uproar in a moment, but the ostler, rushing over the way, seized the dog by the throat and made him release Todd, who crawled upon all fours into his own shop. In another moment he rushed out with a razor in his hand. "Where's the dog?" he cried. "Where's the fiend in the shape of a dog?" "Hold hard," said the ostler, who held Hector between his knees. "Hold hard, I've got him, old chap. Get out of the way, I'll have his life." "No, you won't." "Huh," cried a butcher's boy who was passing. "Why, that's the same dog as said the barber had done for his master, and collected never such a lot of halfpence in his hat to pay expenses of burying them."
"You villain!" cried Todd.
"Go to blazes," said the boy. "Who killed the dog's master?" "Ah, who did it?" The people began to laugh.
"I insist upon killing that dog," cried Todd.
"Do you?" said the ostler. This here dog's a particular friend of mine, so you see, you can't have it done. If you walk into him, you must walk through me first. Only just put down that razor and I'll give you such a wallop, and big as you are, you'll recollect for some time." "Down with the razor! Down with the razor!" cried the mob, who was now every moment increasing. The people took the part of the dog and his new master, and it was in vain that Sweeney Todd exhibited his rent garment as to show where he had been attacked by the animal. Shouts of laughter and various satirical allusions to his beauty were the only response. Suddenly, without a word, Todd then gave up the contest and retired into his shop, upon which the ostler conveyed Pison over the way and shut him up in one of the stables of the Bullfinch. Todd, it is true, retired to his shop with an appearance of equanimity, but it was most like the appearances in this world, rather deceitful. The moment the door was closed between him and observation, he ground his teeth together and positively howled with rage. "The time will come, the time will come," he said, "when I shall have the joy of seeing Fleet Street in a blaze, and of hearing the shrieks of those who are frying in the flames. Ooh, that I could with one torch ignite London, and sweep it and all its inhabitants from the face of the earth. Oh, that all those who are now without my shop had but one throat. Ha ha! How I would cut it!" He glared at the crouching boy, or rather Johanna, and seizing a razor threw himself into a ferocious attitude. But at this moment the door opened, and a seafaring man entered his shop in haste, throwing himself on a chair, requesting to be shaved immediately. He appeared to have but lately returned from India or some other hot climate, for his features were well bronzed, and from his general aspect and conversation, he appeared to be a man of superior station in life. However, in this manner the barber reasoned and came to the conclusion that he should have a good morning's work.
"A fine morning, sir," said Todd.
"Very," said the stranger, "but make haste and accomplish your task. I have a payment to make to a merchant in the city this morning by 9 o'clock, and it is now more than 8:30.
"I will polish you off in no time," said the barber with a grin. "Then you can proceed and transact your business in good time. Sit a little nearer this way, sir. The chair will only stand firmly in one position, and it is exceedingly uncomfortable for gentlemen to remain, even for a few moments, on an unsteady chair."
"It is a maxim of mine, sir," said Todd, "to make everybody that comes to my shop as comfortable as possible during the short time they remain with me. 1/2 inch further this way, sir, and you will be in a better position." As he spoke, he drew the chair to the spot he wished it, which circumstance seemed to please him, for he looked around him and indulged in one of those hideous grins. Then, turning to Johanna, who appeared like a timid boy, said,
Charlie, you can run over to Mrs. Lovett. Get a pie for yourself.
Charlie left the shop. By this time, the lather was over the seaman's face. He could not speak except at the imminent risk of swallowing a considerable quantity of soap that Todd had covered his face with. The barber seemed dexterously to ply a razor on the seaman's face, which caused him to make wry faces, indicating that the operation was painful. The grimaces grew more fantastic to the beholder, but evidently less able to be withstood by the person operated upon.
"Good God, barber!" he said at length, ejaculated. "Why the devil don't you keep better materials? I cannot stand this. The razor you are attempting to shave me with has not been ground, I should think, for 12 months. Get another and finish me off, as you term it, in no time." "Exactly, sir. I will get one more suited to your beard and will return in 1 minute, when you will be polished off to my satisfaction."
He entered the little parlor at the back of the shop. But previously he took the precaution of putting his eye to the hole that gave a sight into the street. Turning around, apparently satisfied with his scrutiny, he went in search of the superior razor he spoke of. A low, grating sound like that of a ragged cord commencing the movement of pulleys was to be heard. When Sir Richard Blunt threw the door open and took a seat in the shop near where the stranger was sitting, he was so disguised that Todd could not recognize him as the same person that had been in his shop so many times before. The barber's face was purple with rage and disappointment, but he restrained it by an immense effort and spoke to Sir Richard in a tolerably calm tone.
"Haircut, sir, or shave, sir. I shall not be long before I have finished this gentleman off. Perhaps you would like to call in again in a few minutes."
"Oh, thank you. I'm not in a particular hurry. Being rather tired, I will rest myself in your shop, if you have no objection."
"My shop is but just open. Our ventilation being bad, it is much more pleasant to inhale the street air for a few minutes than the vitiated air of houses in this neighborhood."
"I'm not much afraid for my health for a few minutes, therefore I would rather take rest."
Todd turned his face away and ground his teeth. When he found that all his arguments were unavailing in moving the will of his new customer, therefore he soon finished shaving the first customer.
"At your service, sir," said Todd to Sir Richard, who seemed absorbed in reading a newspaper he took from his pocket.
He looked up and saw that the stranger was nearly ready to leave. Therefore he continued reading till the stranger was in the act of passing out of the shop, when he said,
"What time did the royal family pass through Temple Bar to the city this morning?"
9:30, said Todd.
"Then I have not time to be shaved now. I will call in again. Good morning."
Saying which, he also left the shop. In a few minutes after leaving the shop of Todd, Sir Richard and the men employed by him were in consultation, and he urged strongly that the men should remain nearer to the shop than they had hitherto done, for if Sir Richard had been 2 minutes later, most likely he who had escaped the angry billows would have been launched into eternity by the villainous barber. Todd fairly danced with rage. Hark, a knock. He opened the door.
"Is this here keg of turpentine for you?" said a man with it upon his shoulder. "Mr. Todd's this is, ain't it?" "Yes, yes, put it down, my good fellow. You ought to have something to drink."
"Oh, thank you kindly, sir."
"But you must pay for it yourself. There's a public house opposite."
The man went away swearing, and scarcely had he crossed the threshold when a letter was brought by a lad and handed to Todd. Before he could ask any questions, the lad was gone. Todd held the letter in his hand and glanced at the direction. It was to him, sure enough, and written in a very clerk-like hand, too. It was as follows. "Sir, we beg to inform you that our Hamburg vessel, in which you have done us the favor to take passage, will not sail till tomorrow night at 4, God willing, and that consequently there will be no occasion for your coming on board earlier. We are, sir, your obedient servants, Brown, Buggins, Muggs, and Screamer, to Mr. S. Todd." Todd ground his teeth together in a horrible manner. He dashed the letter on the floor and stamped upon it.
"Curse Brown and Buggins!" he cried. "I only wish I could dash out Muggs and Screamer's brains with Brown and Muggins' skulls. Confound them and their ships! May they all go to the bottom when I'm out of them and be smashed and damned!"
Joanna was amazed at this sudden torrent of wrath. She could not imagine what had produced it, for Todd had read the letter in a muttering tone that effectually prevented her from hearing any of it. Suddenly, he saw a postscript at the foot of the shipowner's letter, which he had at first overlooked. "P.S. The ship is removed to Crimmins Wharf, but will be at her old moorings at the time mentioned above."
"Oh, damn Crimmins and his wharf, too!" cried Todd.
He flung himself into a chair and sat for a time profoundly still. During that period, he tried to make up his mind as to what it would be best for him, under the circumstances, to do. Many plans floated through his imagination. He could not for a long time bring himself to believe that the letter of the colonel's was anything but a feint to throw him off his guard in some way. At length he got into a calmer frame of mind. "Shall I leave at once, or stay till tomorrow night? That is the question." He argued this with himself, pro and con. If he left, he would have to secrete himself somewhere all the following day, and the fact of his having left would make an active search, safe to be instituted for him, which would possibly be successful. Besides, how was he conveniently to set fire to his house, unless he was off on the moment that the flames burst forth? Then, if he had stayed, he had Mrs. Lovett to encounter, but that was all. Surely he could put her off for a few hours. Surely she, of all people in the world, was not to run to a police officer and destroy both him and herself, just because she did not get some money at 10 o'clock that he had promised to hand to her. "Charlie," he said, "I'm going out. I shall not be long."
Please join me next time for the further adventures of Sweeney Todd here on Stories from the Shadows. In the meantime, I wouldn't blame you if you leave the lights on.